There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You are listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. If you'd like to have your say, we're encouraging you to do that. You can text us now on 4001. You can get in touch at Dubai Eye Sport and, of course, at Dubai Eye 103.8 FM. We're broadcasting from the rooftop garden down here at Barasti. Beautiful evening. It's one of those perfect days here in the UAE, and sports fans well catered for as well. Let's get some live score updates for you. Let's start with our feature game. Robbie Greenfield is watching Manchester United away at Fulham.
37 minutes on the clock in this one, Tom, and I can tell you the score remains, as we just told you, Manchester United 2, Fulham 0. Goals from Paul Pogba, a lovely through ball from Anthony Martial, and then Martial himself got on the score sheet in the second for the second goal with a mazy run followed by a beautiful finish past the Fulham goalkeeper, and it is 2-0 to Manchester United. Sergio Rico powerless to do anything on either of those finishes. Near post from Pogba from an acute angle, and Martial just a lovely mazy run and then a great finish at the end of it. United well in charge here. Fulham had some early chances, but it's all United subsequently, and it's 2-0 with 38 minutes on the clock.
What's happening in Spanish La Liga? I can tell you that Getafe have equalised in the first half of that game, and it's not going well for Celta Vigo. It went well early doors. Nesta Arroyo with the opening goal after just 2 minutes, but they're down 10 men now with Maximiliano Gomez Gonzalez being sent off on 37 minutes, and 2 minutes later from the penalty spot, which was the reason for the sending off, Jaime Mata stepping up to knock Getafe to one apiece against Celta Vigo in the early game over there. We've got an early kickoff in the Championship as well, the Skybet Championship, which we'll keep an eye on for you. That's the ones just got underway a few moments ago. Borough taking on Leeds. We'll keep an eye on that one for you.
Yeah,
that
still
be a good game as well.
Yeah, very, very much so. Fifth place Borough taking on the second place Leeds. Of course, they are tied with Norwich at the top of the table, but behind them on goal difference, and should be a pretty close game this. 0-0, 7 minutes in. We'll keep an eye on that one. Any score updates, any goals as they happen, you'll be the first to hear about them.
Yeah, extraordinary game in the Championship last night, which we'll reflect on a little later in proceedings. So we've got Robbie Greenfield, we've got Mark Archer, and we've got that man, OSR, alongside us as well. And if you'd like to get in touch, then do come and join us as we watch this game, and of course, build up to the Six Nations rugby a little later on, and those 7 o'clock kickoffs in the Premier League. Our feature game will be Liverpool against Bournemouth, and then of course stick around straight after that one, because coming up from 9:30, Brighton against Burnley, it's all the bees. In the meantime though, let's just reflect on Manchester United, all things Manchester United, because it's been an extraordinary last couple of weeks. Mark Archer, Manchester United fan. It's funny because I just popped downstairs to the little boys' room just a few minutes ago there during the news, and that sort of that buzz downstairs here at Barasti, big crowd in at the moment. Say what you like about Manchester United, they do pull in the punters, that's for sure. And when United are playing like this as well, there is that sort of sense of expectation.
I thought it was because OSR was in the house, but anyway, yeah, big crowd gathered at down here at Barasti in front of the big screen watching Manchester United Fulham, and I'm guess a few of them will also be here for that 6:15 kickoff Scotland Ireland, always a popular match here. But yeah, there is a buzz, and it was funny. Start of the season, I was a pretty diehard saying I'm a result orientated fan. I don't really worry too much about the performance. I don't want to be entertained. I'm hardcore. I want to win. And after a while, probably getting into October and November, I almost gave up watching United. I wasn't interested. I wanted to see the result, but it wasn't entertaining for me at all, so I basically stopped watching them. Now I want to watch the matches, which is the difference between basically 6 weeks to 2 months.
What you're saying is you are a fair weather and very fickle fan.
No. I'm a hardcore fan. Is I want my team to win at all costs. I'm not worried about performance generally. But then I got so disheartened with A, not getting a result and not being entertained. I'd had enough. But now I've bought into the Solskjaer plan. The team are playing much better football and they're getting results. So it's a much better time to be a Man United fan. Momentum's with them now. They can get this result today, 2-0 up to almost half time. They're going to jump ahead of Fulham into jump ahead of Chelsea into fourth. And Champions League football is beckoning again. Seems to me, Oasis, being an Arsenal fan, they seem to have got a bit of a road bump in the last few weeks. Chelsea seems to be having a bit of an inconsistent period as well. So the momentum seems to be with United to try and grab that fourth spot behind Spurs, City, and of course Liverpool.
Rob, you've been looking at some of the comments that Ollie's made in the build-up to this game.
Certainly have, yes. And here's one. Jose Mourinho, when he was at Manchester United, would would and subsequently, in fact, when he made an appearance on BeIN Sports just a few weeks ago, would say that modern footballers are very difficult. They're very it's a dressing room full of prima donnas. They're very difficult. The egos are hard to manage. Not the case for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Take a listen to this.
You have to have had, over the years, a certain kind of discipline, element of sacrifice, hard work. So it's quite easy, you know, when you get players of that level, because they're so hungry to improve. They just want to learn. Mm-hmm. They want to be better. They want to be the best. They want to be winners. As soon as you see that they've lost the hunger to be the best, that's when they struggle. That's when I've really got to step in. And I haven't had to so far. Once in a while, you know that. Sometimes timekeeping and all these little things, all them little habits, that in the end will make a massive difference.
I just wonder the long-term kind of future for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's not an imposing character. There's something diminutive about him. Alex Ferguson, I think, commanded such respect, but there was also a healthy degree of fear of Fergie in that dressing room. And there's no doubt that, that the CVs of Jose Mourinho and Louis van Gaal commanded respect. Now, things didn't go the way that they planned, and the players just didn't gel under those two tenures. But it will be interesting to see if this very almost seemingly happy-go-lucky approach of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and I know in Mick Phelan, he's got a great backroom staff there, Michael Carrick as well, very much involved in the coaching side of things. So there's a lot of experience in that team which he's heading up. But, you know, you hear him there talking about players of quality. This is a guy that managed Cardiff and Mulder. You know, and he's moved to a club which has aspirations about getting back into a position where they can challenge for the Premier League title. So it's a completely, completely different ball game. And it's interesting to hear him speak so refreshingly, I suppose. And he doesn't sound like a typical Manchester United manager, Arch.
I want to stay on the subject of management and coaching and bring Ole in and talk about cricket coaching and what type of coach motivated you. Were you sort of the player that you needed? You were inspired by a coach that had been there, done that, played lots of tests, got lots of runs, or were you more motivated, so a player's coach or someone that really understood it, or did you come across coaches that never played the game ever really to any great level but had a great sort of technical knowledge and a great way of motivating players? What the two different types there, what worked for you? What did you sort of believe in?
Yeah, just before I answer that question, just talking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer earlier about, you know, what he's brought to Manchester United. Look, I've never managed a football team or anything like that. But the only thing I would say is the players would probably look at him and say, you know what, you've been there and done that. You know, you've played in the great era of Manchester United football club. And I think it just depends on what kind of group of players you come across. And I just wonder if these group of players love the fact that they've been given that sort of go and play sort of approach, that sort of freedom is, hey, I'm the manager, but I'm not got this stick in my hand like maybe a Ferguson or maybe a Jose Mourinho sort of would go about it. He's sort of saying, I respect you as a professional. So act professionally, respect me because, I've deserved it because I've been an absolute legend of the club. But go out there and express yourself. And I wonder that's what these guys are enjoying.
Absolutely. And I think, to that point, I mean, you know, it's clear that Martial and Pogba do not respond well to disciplinarian managers. And Jose Mourinho, arguably the most disciplinarian of all the managers.
Well, we are in a different era now. You know, you go back 20 years ago, maybe, that sort of, that, like I said, that coach with the stick works. But nowadays, you know, you've got to sort of work with what kind of personalities you have. And you might just say, well, you must have, we did have difficult personalities perhaps in the olden days. But the point I'm trying to make is nowadays it's just they want more freedom. They want more sort of that free role. I just wonder if that's what's really worked for them.
There has been a lot of talk, not just this season, but in recent seasons past, about players being softer, players being less motivated, players being less disciplined. Now, that's in football, but is there something you've noticed in sport, Oe? Is the modern world of players caring more about what's going on social media? That's often the refrain, isn't it? The Mourinhos of this world would say, Paul Pogba's more interested in how many likes he's getting on social media than his footballing performance. Is that something that you think is really happening, and is it a problem?
I think it's all, for me, it's about getting the balance right. And yes, sometimes I think players go too much into the whole social media, maybe not as disciplined and stuff. And, you know, the old school values is what I call them. I loved old school values, but also I also like the fact that, you know, guys do like responsibilities. They've got to be able to think under pressure for themselves, not the coach constantly telling them, do this, da-da-da-da-da. And I just think the best coaches, and now going on to the question you asked me, Archie, is I like the coaches who sort of, yes, they were disciplined enough and they earned the respect because they had played the game and they've sort of achieved the honours. I mean, just to talk about your question, we never had a coach in cricket who had not played at the highest level or had played cricket. So you never have a guy, you know, who has not played football professionally coaching in cricket. But we had guys, for me, who was the best coaches were the guys who had played the game, they knew what it was about, but also gave you that responsibility and respected your opinion. And sort of work with you rather than say, this is the way, mate, get on with it, you know. I like the fact that they actually understood me as a person and then sort of applied that into the kind of brand of cricket I wanted to play.
Who was then your best coach, and which coach got the best out of you, got the best technical, mental preparation, you made you the best player that you were?
Yeah, I had a brief, chap called Richard Pybus, who's the West Indies coach right now. He had a very, very brief spell at Middlesex, and he left a lasting impression in my cricketing career and my life. And then I actually went to play for Cape Cobras. I played there for 6 months under him. And what he did was, as soon as he came to Middlesex, he really took an interest in every single individual and trying to get them know on a personal level before he started talking about, let's do this, this, this. And what that really straight away got us was, wow, this guy's really actually interested in what I want to do and how I want to operate and what makes me tick, because we're all different things, you know. We all get sort of motivated by different things, and that was very refreshing about him.
So if he's that end of the scale, I don't know if this is a fair question to ask you as well, if you're not comfortable naming names or anything, but, and I'm not saying that they're a bad coach or anything, but who would be the other end of the scale who didn't get the best out of you?
That's pretty easy. I know the guy has been a legend of for coaching England and stuff, and he's achieved a lot, but for me, Duncan Fletcher was an absolute nightmare, because he didn't really sort of communicate. He hardly spoke anything to myself, especially. I mean, I know he was a man of few words, but for me, I loved communication. Even if I'm playing badly, just say, hey buddy, you're playing badly, if you can go and fix that, you get another go in a test team or one day team. That's it, probably a 5 sentences, but he only spoke about 2 or 3 words. So that was very frustrating to know where you stood. And that was very difficult. And you know, people might say, well, why didn't you go and speak to him? It's not that easy when you're sort of trying to find your way in a team to just go up to the cage, hey, coach, tell me, what do I need to do? It doesn't work like that. So you're sort of almost looking at the coach to communicate with you. In terms of communication, Peter Moores was outstanding. Yeah. He would talk to you about exactly what you needed to do, where you are, and how you're going to find yourself back. And as an athlete, you just need clarity in your mind to go, okay, I need to do this, 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 because, you know, sport is logical. I need to do this, 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 and if I can be there and thereabouts, there's a bloody good chance I'm going to be playing.
And that's really interesting you talk about Peter Moores, is because who was the player that got rid of him? It was Kevin Peterson. Kevin Peterson refused to be coached by someone that hadn't played at the very highest level and had more records and stuff, and the same approach for Shane Warne. Shane Warne had John Buchanan, remember? He said the only thing he thought a coach was useful for was to take the team to the ground and back. That was literally Shane Warne's, and that's Shane Warne, Kevin Peterson's approach as getting the best out of them. They need to be motivated by someone that had been there, done that at the very, very highest level. But you're saying it was, you wanted someone that could know you, understand you, communicate with you. Didn't matter if they were the best player of all time, but someone that could actually relate to you and actually do coaching
well,
that
way. Yes, but also I need that balance. I do need someone who, you know, who has played there, but also if that person can also manage you well. That's what it's about, because ultimately it's all about me going out there and performing. The coach can only prepare me. Let's just be honest. He can't play my innings or take my catches. But I needed someone who, yeah, he's been there, so he earns my respect straight away. But then also he manages me so well to say, you know, I'm sort of, it's almost as it feels like the coach is a part of me. And he's right behind me there, pushing me all the way, rather than sort of almost say, well, if I don't perform here, the coach is, you know, might not pick me next game, things like that. So I don't, those are the kind of coaches who I absolutely love.
From a player perspective, OA, and this was a conversation we had the other day, and it's come up a couple of times in the sphere of rugby. Ali Williams, the former All Black, mentioned, and I'll have to paraphrase this because they've got a choice word for it, but no bad apples. That's their policy. They don't, individuals that disrupt the team harmony, no matter how good they are, they could be the Dan Carter. If he disrupts the team harmony, then he's not in the All Black setup. And quite a few of the other, we asked Mike Phillips, the former Welsh rugby great, also about this. And he mentioned that there was a similar kind of, you've got to toe the line. And it seems like in football specifically, there are those individuals that are disruptive influences in that dressing room. From your point of view, you know, and in cricket, there would be one or two names that we might be able to mention on that sort of sphere. Uber talented, but divisive and the team harmony was affected. What's your take on that? Is that you make room for those special talents, or you have to have a policy whereby everyone must toe the line and get on board the same kind of philosophy?
I actually think that the kind of people who make those comments that, you know, no bad apples and stuff, and I would actually say that it's their lack of ability to manage those players. I would definitely have an absolute maverick in my team every day of the week. But then it's up to me to manage him. It's up to me to discipline him. So I would actually say that their managerial qualities, perhaps, would be questioned. And maybe they're not prepared to tap into their sort of managerial qualities to say, how am I going to manage this guy? He is difficult. But I tell you what, he gets 100 every week. Mm. I want him in my team, and I'm going to try my best, do some research on how to manage people and find a way to manage him. Because I want Shane Warne in my team. I want Kevin Peterson in my team. I want the legends of the game in my team.
So on that point, with David Warner and Steve Smith about to make their return next month to the Australian fold, you would advocate, given how good Warner is, and you know, there's obviously been talk already, Tim Payne has said that he's going to play an important role in the World Cup and obviously the Ashes as well. But you know, this whole new Australian philosophy, they've elite, what was it, Archer? They've put it up on the wall, something like elite perfection or something like that. It's it'll come to me, but they've got this whole new PR-led and PR-driven kind of philosophy now, whereby
what could possibly go wrong. Yeah,
well, exactly. David Warner, you know, does not fit in to that new kind of
ethos,
if you will. But
we'll
yet,
find a way for him to fit in. He's a class act with the bat. Yeah. You know, find a way. Who's the Justin Langer needs to find a way to get to know David Warner and have a chat with him. Say, I need you in the team, but the team operates this way. So it's got to be, he's the one who's got to be firm with him and find a way, whether it's, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's financial, if it's mental, I don't know. But he's got to find a way to have him in that team, because with him in the team has got better chances of winning.
Elite honesty. That was what it was. Like, I knew it would come back to me.
It's up on Archer's walls as well, I'm sure. Look, I just want to sort of take this up to the half past. We've got a couple of minutes just to delve on this. It's been interesting that the way this conversation has gone, because we were talking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and what he's done there. We've looked onto other coaches and other sports as well. And to that end, I wonder, maybe this is a bit of a maverick opinion on this one, but just to throw it out there, Mark Archer, let's start with you on this. If we look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and the way that he's approaching, what do managers do these days? Is there a need for a manager? If you've got so much talent at your disposal at a club like Manchester United, and you could take a cricket a scenario, you could take a rugby a scenario, what is the role of the manager today? Is he readdressing what that role is? If Mourinho got it so wrong and Ole's getting it so right by not doing a huge amount, by his own admission, what is the role of a manager these days?
Managing egos, isn't it? And putting a bit of a plan in place. Because we've often heard the stories about...
Isn't that the role of individual coaches?
Well, we see a lot of sports now have specialist coaches. You look at cricket teams. England cricket team have more coaches on tour than they do of players. You look at the football teams. American Super Bowl last weekend, they have 50 something players on a squad of, you know, on an NFL team,
but about 48 coaches
and probably, no, you're not exaggerating, probably 20 to 30 coaches. in that team because you have positional coaches. So that the head coach or the manager or the whatever we're calling them don't do a lot of coaching. They basically manage personnel and they probably look at the system and tactics and manage coaches who all pull that together. And they're accountable for what happens on the week, and they're the spokesperson. But it all lies with them. So if they can't get the right coaches in place to either do the coaching, to get the tactics right, to manage the personalities, that's pretty much what you see now with these top coaches.
Watto's a great example on this one. I did an event with him last year. He was talking about, you know, his approach to it. Shane Watson is a man who saw his extraordinary career blighted for a large part because of injury. And it became, you know, quite specific because he was being asked to do certain training that would have caused problems with his back because of his injury problems. So he therefore campaigned to bring his own coach and his own sort of medical team into the Australian cricket setup, and that caused a lot of friction. It caused a lot of problems.
That situation's just come up this week because their bowling coach David Sakers, he's announced that he's stepping down. And you know why? Mitchell Starc, who plays for New South Wales and Australia, one of the premier fast bowlers in the world, bar none, has said that the advice he was getting from Andre Adams, former New Zealand fast bowler, his coach at New South Wales, was what he was listening to now. There was a massive disagreement in the recent series about bowling line and length and philosophy. And the bowlers were going against the bowling coach. They said, we don't believe in your tactics. We're going to go out here. And it was against the captaincy. So Tim Payne said, do one thing. I want to set this field, bowl this line, this length. This is how we're going to get out. And the bowlers go, no, that's not right. And they wanted to do it their own way. So, yeah, it's a massive problem when you've got dissent in the dressing room and a difference of philosophy or tactics as well. But the head coach, his job is to make sure that he has all those things being consistent and being magnified, and that's obviously caused him a big problem. But you bang dead right.
And just jumping on that, but then in that situation, for me, that's what I'm talking about. The head coach has got to be that kind of, get it balanced right. He's got to be firm, but yet he's got to find a way to be a player's mate and manage them, their personnel. That's exactly for me what a coach is now. You know, I don't need a coach telling me how to play a cover drive. I know how to play a cover drive, but it's about when I'm sort of slack, or when I'm mentally not there sometimes, or you know, just sort of get me motivated again. And I know listeners out there might think, well, you're not motivated to play for your team or whatever. Say if I was a footballer playing for Man United. Well, you got to realize that you do that every single day. So, excuse me, what happens is sort of that you look at it as a game of football. Yeah. Not necessarily I'm playing for Man United. Yeah, that's all a given. But you got to, at times and stages in your career, other things affect you. And you got to, and if you do find yourself on a bit of a downer in regards to what I mean by that is if you're finding lack of motivation, or I don't know, if you're becoming a difficult player or whatever, coach has to step in and find a way to sort of tackle that problem. And for me, they are the best coaches who find ways of making, you know, maybe a difficult player play and along with the team.
And I think, you know, what we're seeing with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, it's probably a little bit like what happened with England and the national team under Gareth Southgate. Not a man who was considered to be a top-level manager with an overarching philosophy. No one ever mistook him for Pep Guardiola. But he did the simple things very well, and he motivated a group of players. International football is notoriously difficult to know what your best team is, and to for years for England they couldn't have some of the two best midfielders in Europe. Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard could hardly play in the same team together. They just weren't effective playing together, and everyone's scratching their head thinking, how on earth can someone like Fabio Capello get that wrong? How is it possible to get that wrong when you've got such gifted players? But Gareth Southgate, it's more about sometimes what you don't put in than what you do put in. And when you're talking about club football, it then elevates itself to, can that manager impose his overarching philosophy? And can he sign the right players? Can he get the balance right to make the team that he's got at his disposal able to execute his grand philosophy? And that's what we've seen. Pep Guardiola took a season to implement with Manchester City to incredible effect. And at Chelsea at the moment, Maurizio Sarri, in this famed Sarri ball, it doesn't look like he's got the right personnel to make Sarri ball an effective tactic at Chelsea. Everything's going through Jorginho. Once you neutralise Jorginho, Chelsea are able to be got at. And he's brought in Higuain now because he's needed a centre-forward. So it's a huge balancing act for these managers. And you've got some in the lower divisions and the lower rungs of the Premier League who are just simply looking to be organised and survive. But then at the top level, it's all about, can your philosophy of football work with the group of players that you've got at your disposal. And it's amazing how often that is not the case.
It's half-time at Craven Cottage. More from the boys in just a few moments. Tommy, listening to The Grill, we're broadcasting live down here at Barasti. Players back out on the pitch for the second half. Manchester United in control of that one. No goals in the early kickoff in the Championship. Around the grounds and leading up to the Six Nations kickoff, which is, what, 45 minutes away. The first game in the Six Nations. We'll talk about that next.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Barasti's own 10-year challenge launches the 10th of February.
Hokey dokey, what's happening in the world of sport? Let's get around the grounds for you. I'm going to start over in La Liga before we head over to the UK for the latest from the Premiership and the Championship. Over in La Liga, Celta Vigo's afternoon's just got worse. They led this game after a goal from Nestor Araujo after 2 minutes. Then we had Maximiliano Gonzalez sent off on 37. That resulted in a goal for the home team, Getafe, from Jaime Mata from the penalty spot on 39. And now they've come out in the second half. They've taken the lead through Jorge Molina Vidal on 62. It's Getafe 2, Celta Vigo 1. To the Premier League.
Yeah, to the Premier League, and Manchester United have resumed against Fulham at Craven Cottage. It's 49 minutes on the clock, Tom. It is still 2-0 to United. Goals in that first half via Paul Pogba and Anthony Martial. Two fine goals they were as well, and Fulham have had no answer thus far. It is more United pressure in the early stages of this first half. We will, of course, be keeping a very, very close eye on this one all the way through until its conclusion as we build up to the 7 p.m. games. And I can tell you as well, 35 minutes on the clock in the Championship. Middlesbrough fifth place taking on second place Leeds United, 0-0 after 36 minutes.
England Lions trail India A by 180 runs with 10 wickets remaining. That is the multi-day match taking place between the two teams. England A 20 without loss in their second innings. First innings 540 for 6 declared for India A in that one. Also in other results for you, we can tell you New Zealand T20 ongoing as we speak. Canterbury have won by 7 wickets in their game against Wellington. Auckland beat Central Districts by 8 wickets, and Otago beat Northern Districts by 5 wickets. Two games for you over in the Big Bash as well, where the Adelaide Strikers have beaten the Perth Scorchers by 5 wickets. Sydney Thunder have been action against the Hobart Hurricanes, and Sydney Thunder winning by 4 wickets in a Duckworth-Lewis result there. West Indies against England gets underway around about 6, Mark Archer?
Yeah, in about 20 minutes' time, I can tell you, they've just had the toss over there, and it's been won by the West Indies, who elect to bowl first, which is interesting. That would suggest to me there's a little bit of juice in the wicket somewhere, and the West Indies will look to continue their dominance over the England batting lineup. Of course, Jason Holder, their captain, I know we'll get onto this at some stage, so I do want to bring it up, has been banned for the match because of the team's poor over rate. We've seen a few bans recently in the last few weeks in cricket, and I'd love to get to OA's thoughts on overrates and captains getting banned. Also, touch on Safiz Ahmed and his ban recently in the last few weeks as well. But yeah, West Indies have won the toss. They will field first. England and their new formed top order will be out to face the West Indies attack in about 20 minutes' time.
Yeah, send your thoughts on that one as well. Let's get to the rugby, though, because we've got a massive weekend of Six Nations rugby. Weekend two of the Six Nations after victories for Scotland, Wales and England last weekend. A lot to look forward to today. First game gets underway at 6:15. We'll, of course, preview that one in full for you in just a few moments' time. There is one game going on at the moment. This is the Premiership Rugby Cup, which sort of goes very much under the radar at this time of year, with good reason, because a majority of the big guns are playing, obviously, for their countries at the moment during the Six Nations. Run out here for the squads in many ways, but that doesn't mean that they are low scoring effects. In fact, semi-final is underway. It's still the first half. Northampton lead Newcastle by 40 points to 33. So there's been a bit of entertainment for the crowd down there at Northampton at the moment. In the meantime, though, obviously, focus will be featured, will be focusing on the Guinness Six Nations, which gets underway at 6:15 with a real tasty tie-up between Scotland and Ireland.
Jim Murrayfield sounding and grand voice looking at its very finest.
There's acceleration and he's gone! Oh, what a try! What a try from Stuart Hogg!
His first Six Nations start. It's wonderful for Blair Kinghorn.
We'll
So it's a little sneaky one. It's straight through for the try, and it's Dunbar. It is good from Greg Laidlaw. It is great from Scotland. They have beaten Ireland.
We're going to look at the fixture list for this one, Mark Archer. How many of us were expecting to be sat here on the second weekend saying that going for two from two in the tournament was Scotland rather than Ireland?
Yeah, massive result last week when England went to Dublin and really gave the Irish team a little bit of a thrashing. Fantastic result for England. I think the most complete performance I've seen under Eddie Jones, and it really laid a marker down for the Six Nations, but also ahead in the World Cup year. So a big win last week for England, 32 points to 20. And how often in recent years haven't we seen Ireland have to struggle or trying to find some form? Well, they've made some changes today, five changes for Joe Smith's men, and they'll be wanting to bounce back and put a marker down because they really were second best in pretty much every aspect of the game last week. They were out aggressioned, they didn't go forward beyond the gain line. The loose forwards keep putting them back. Big performances by the Vunipola brothers. Manu Tuilagi made a big difference in midfield, and Ireland just looked as though they didn't have any answers. They didn't look as though they had plan B. The Conor Murray, Johnny Sexton game didn't really function. The box kicks weren't going as accurately, and they really didn't look as though they were going to get anything out of the game, and they didn't in the end. So Joe Smith, well, he's rung some changes, five changes in fact. Rob Kearney, he returns at fullback. Chris Farrell, he replaces Gary Ringrose in the centres. Ringrose is injured. Two injury enforced changes also on the forwards. Quinn Roo replaces the lock Devon Toner, and CJ Stander makes way for Jack Conan. Sean O'Brien comes in for Josh van der Vlaar in the forwards as well. So Ireland have had to make changes. Let's just have a quick listen to the coach, Joe Smith, on this difficult matchup, going to Murrayfield, taking on Scotland, who did have a good win last week.
We're expecting them to be very, very tough to beat. They play at a very high tempo. I think they will be looking to play with very fast rucks with the counter-attack threat that they have. I see that Sean Maitland has been brought back in. Feel a bit sorry for Blair Kinghorn. I think he's a super young player. Obviously, man of the weekend last weekend and onto the bench this weekend, but it gives him strength and depth there. And Sean Maitland is a super athlete, really good player. So that back three present real threats across the board. And Finn Russell's ability to get them into the game via Sam Johnson and via Hugh Jones. And Hugh Jones is a real strike threat himself. So I've no doubt they'll try to get those guys involved. And then, you know, just harassing and getting into your face and carrying guys like Ryan Wilson, you know, Josh Strauss, big strong man. I think he came on and made an impression. He well earned his place to go again against us. So across the board, I think they'll play with tempo, and I think they'll try to vary it up. The last thing you want to do is try to chase the championship going to Scotland against such a tough team. We have to build our way into the game. We can't be chasing things and trying to get instant results. You've got to earn whatever you get up there, because they give so little away and they work so hard for each other. You know, I'd be really proud of the way they work if I was Gregor, and I'm sure he is. So for us, it doesn't probably change the mentality too much. We just want to take it one game at a time. We're not going to chase a tournament when we've got such a tough task in front of us.
Well, Josh Smith there giving his thoughts ahead of this game. BBC website calling this flair versus structure. Do Scotland have what it takes to beat Ireland? A fair assumption, that one?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people say that Ireland, for me, the best coach team in the world. We talk about coaching styles earlier with Owais, and Joe Smith's done a fantastic job. He's built depth there, he's built structure, he's built a purpose. There's a common belief. There's not too many superstars that really stand out, but they're such a well-drilled team, so efficient, so organised, so difficult to play against. The criticism is, for me, they were down on the scoreboard last week. Did they have a plan B? Did they have some X factor? The question's answer was no. They didn't know where to turn to. Their big players didn't stand up when they were going backwards, and it was tough for them. So, and then the talk with Scotland is they do have some flair. Finn Russell sets those backs alight. And Gregor Townsend's had the luxury of resting the hat-trick hero from last week. The man that scored three tries, Blair Kinghorn, he's gone to the bench. And Sean Maitland, one of the kilted Kiwis, has come on to the wing. And so he comes back into the lineup. Johnny Gray returns for Scotland. That's a big plus because he is a genuine world-class forward. And then, of course, a couple other changes. Simon Bergen comes in and Josh Strauss comes back into the forward pack. So Murrayfield at home, Scotland playing their first match there in the Six Nations. Things are in a promising place for them, but Ireland will be tough. I wouldn't expect them to have two bad performances 2 weeks in a row. That's how efficient the team is. But Gregor Townsend, this is what the captain of Scotland had to say, Greg Lanelaw, about this match. The captain's run was yesterday, and this is what Captain Lanelaw had to say.
Yeah, it is a bit today here at BT Murrayfield, and it'll be the same for both teams tomorrow, looking at the forecast, so got to factor that in the game plan. But ultimately, we've had another strong week together, and looking forward to getting back out here in front of a sold-out BT Murrayfield tomorrow.
I believe you watched the game, the Ireland game last week at the Boyton Changing Room. What did you make of Ireland against England?
Oh, I think it was a brutally tough test match, and you know, at times in the game, probably could have went either way, and England just got the upper hand. So, as I said, a very tough test match, and you know, Ireland will be looking to bounce back this week, and that's the challenge that lies ahead of us, and it's a strong challenge, as we know.
It's always often been a close game with Ireland over the past couple of years. What do you need to get right tomorrow to get the W?
It'll be close. Defensively, we need to be really strong and disciplined. Ireland are a disciplined team. They don't give away too many penalties. So on the flip side of that, for us, we need to be the same. Don't give them penalties, to give them field position. Because once they have field position, they're able to hold onto the ball very well. That's one of their strengths. So just make sure we're all over that and back ourselves, get out there and back each other.
Fascinating game this one, Robbie Greenfield, and fascinating tournament as well. I can't think that for certain recent history with this tournament how important home advantage could be in this particular tournament. Ireland to bounce back, but the fact that they got to go to Murrayfield, which is something of a fortress for Scottish fans, it's a really tough ask for them.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the autumn internationals that Scotland had, they were unlucky to lose to South Africa. I think that was a close game. I think off the top of my head, that was about 25-20 they lost to South Africa in the autumn internationals. And we know how good South Africa have become in recent months. So that's the kind of benchmark, that's the kind of standard that Ireland will have to hit in this match. They're a very different proposition, of course, as Arch mentioned. They're much more based on an organisational game, a very structured game, which revolves around Johnny Sexton's precision at fly half. And Scotland have a bit of X factor. You know, I can't believe they've dropped Blair Kinghorn. I can't imagine anyone has scored a hat-trick of tries and then been dropped. You'd have to go through the annals of rugby history to find that in the next match. But Sean Maitland, as Gregor Townsend alluded to, a very adept at replacement for him. And Finn Russell is someone who seems to have become a lot more consistent in his career. Having joined Racing 92, he seems to have eradicated perhaps the kind of one game good, one game not so good that we saw from Scotland in the past. So they've actually become a really, really good side. A lot of people are saying that they're actually outside contenders to win the Six Nations, are Scotland. And this is an acid test for them. We're going to find out exactly how good they are. And we're going to find out how Ireland are capable of recovering from a setback. Because there's no doubt about it, no one expected them to be outplayed quite so comprehensively. I think people were of a mind that England were capable of beating them, but to completely outplay them, the stat that I noted down, 49 dominant tackles to Ireland 6 at the breakdown and in the air. I mean, it was a complete demolition job from England, and I think that took a lot of people by surprise. So Ireland, as Arch said, unlikely to play two poor games in a row, but it just sets it up brilliantly. And then, of course, tomorrow we've got Twickenham, Fortress Twickenham, England taking on the old enemy in France. And
Le Crunch.
Le Crunch, exactly. Wales, with a great opportunity, having rung the changes, are heading over to Italy. Our good friend Mike Wallace will be in the commentary or the pundit box there as well. Mike Phillips, I should say. I'm mixing there. But it's going to be very, very interesting to see how the weekend pans out. And it's, I mean, four teams could technically win the Six Nations.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating at the moment. I suppose one thing Scotland have to be wary of, Mark Archer, following on from last week, where they sort of, obviously they were reduced to 14 for the last 10 minutes or so, but they did take their eye off the game. And that's always been one of the question marks, given the intensity that Gregor Townsend is asking the Scotland to play at the moment. Can they continue that for 80 minutes?
Yeah, I think it's been a question mark. We've seen Scotland string together great halves of rugby in recent years. But where they've really struggled against the good sides, the really good sides, is to put 80 minutes of consistent pressure, attacking, sort of dominance together. And that's the question marks you asked. England delivered it last week. They were relentless for 80 minutes, Eddie Jones's team. We've seen Ireland do it against the All Blacks in recent years, where they've put together pretty complete performances. So can Scotland do it? Can the Murrayfield crowd, a big, big home crowd they'll have there, lift their team to put in a total complete performance across the 80 plus minutes, and can they maintain their discipline? Because we know that you have to be disciplined against Ireland.
Archie, so first kickoff is at 6:15, is that right?
That is correct, 6:15, that's the one at Murrayfield, Scotland and Ireland, and then the later kickoff, 8:45, we'll see Italy take on and face Wales.
Over in Rome.
That's over in Rome, yes.
Okay, so stay tuned for that one. We'll have all the details for you, certainly for the first half of Scotland against Ireland. It's on the big screen down here at Barasti. They will flip from the Manchester United game as soon as that concludes over to the Six Nations rugby. So if you want to watch your rugby, get yourself down here to Barasti. But equally, if you want to watch your football, and plenty to look forward to throughout the remainder of the evening, then that will also be shown down here at Barasti. We'll come back with more sports straight after this.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Barasti's own 10-year challenge launches the 10th of February.
Yeah, you join us live here from Barasti, where another roar has gone up from which faithful? Let's find out. Robbie Greenfield.
Can tell you it is the Manchester United faithful really enjoying their afternoon at Craven Cottage. Paul Pogba on target from the penalty spot for his second goal of the afternoon. A clinical penalty to the goalkeeper's left. No saving those ones. David De Gea celebrating, and Manchester United now 3-0 up. It was a little soft. Juan Mata bundled over in the penalty area, but it was given nonetheless, Tom. And to be quite honest with you, there was no signs that Fulham were being able to get back into the game prior to that. Manchester United do look the winners now. 65 minutes on the clock, 3-0 up, and coasting towards yet another victory under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I'm doing the maths. That would be 25 out of a possible 27 points. Hard to beat that, isn't it?
We've got Oeshar alongside us here from on our commentary position up here on the rooftop garden at Barasti. You love your football, obviously. Cricket is your passion, but you love your football as well. Have you been surprised by this turnaround in form at Manchester United since Solskjaer came in?
Yes, a little bit. Since Solskjaer's come in, we didn't really know what sort of impact he would make at the club. As a manager, he's pretty successful as a player. I think we've mentioned earlier in the program, he's not the kind of personality you normally associate with the giants of Manchester United. But, it's amazing, isn't it? A guy like him has come and really sort of turned things around. And I think it was mentioned earlier, he's... Before this game started, he got 22 points out of a 24, which were available. I mean, that is amazing stats, isn't it? And a lot to be said for managerial skills, I guess you could call it, as something we were touched on earlier in the program. It's all about managing personalities and understanding what's required. It's not always going to be your desired way. You've got to sort of work with the players so that the players can go out there and perform, so that the club, which is the most important thing, can go on to win a game or a trophy or a league.
Talking of winning a game, Getafe seem to have won theirs as well. Still plenty of time left in this one, but they have extended their lead again. Getafe 3, Celta Vigo 1 at the moment. Another goal from Jaime Mata after 81 minutes. Remember, Celta Vigo have been reduced to 10. I don't think there's been a goal in the Championship as yet, has there? It's half-time down there.
Just double-checking now, Tom. No, I don't believe there has.
Still 0-0 in that one.
Yeah, still 0-0, and it is half-time. Of course, Middlesbrough taking on high-flying Leeds United. They're in second spot just behind Norwich on the table on goal difference only, and it is still 0-0. It's a cagey affair thus far at Middlesbrough.
Right, 5 minutes before 6 o'clock, just enough time for us to look ahead to other sports. Obviously, 6:15 is the first kickoff today, that is, for the Six Nations. That's Scotland entertaining Ireland. Before that, though, you've got action over in the West Indies. Day one of the third and final test match between the West Indies and England. Windies have won the series already. England ringing a few changes out of necessity for the third game. We'll give you details on that one. One man who's not going to be featuring is Jason Holder. I'm going to get more thoughts from Arch and from Ace in just a few moments' time on this one. But let's hear about the Jason Holder situation at the moment. A lot of people talking about the fact that it is ridiculous and something should have been done. But Jason Holder has been penalised for the slow overrate in the previous games and has to sit out this third and final test match.
Very frustrating. Yeah, I mean, the rules are there. We all know the rules as well, you know. Even although sometimes you may not be in agreement with the rules such as that, I guess everybody would be of the same opinion that if a game finishes early, or 2 days early, it's hard to penalise someone, you know, because you could practically argue that you can make the overs back up. But, you know, having said that, you know, we knew where we were during the entire game, and credit to the umpires, I felt that they handled the game, you know, quite well. We knew that we were behind and we needed to make up, and we didn't make up in the end. But again, I guess that's debatable from all different angles. It's something that I really personally really don't want to get into, but very frustrating not to be playing, but I'll be there with the boys to help them along as much as they possibly can from in the dressing room.
Look, he's taking it on the chin, he's taking the punishment, Mark Archer, but at the same time, it's one of those situations, isn't it? It's unfortunate that Jason Holder's not able to take the pitch, to take the pitch and enjoy what will be, come regardless of the result of this particular series, a celebration of West Indies cricket over the next few days.
It's unfortunate, isn't it? And I know the rules are the rules and they're there for a reason, but the situation was that the test match finished in 3.5 days. The West Indies, if they'd played worse, they could have actually made up the overs to get the run rate up and he wouldn't have been banned. So maybe there's an issue with the rules. Maybe there's an issue where sometimes you have to make a judgment call on the situation and give it a bit of a chance to breathe and just make a sort of a decision that has some common sense. Yeah. I think for me that's the situation. And we've had a couple, and I do want to talk about a couple of situations in sport in a moment, you know, with Safra's Ahmed, he had a ban. I want to talk about a golfing situation in Saudi Arabia with Sergio Garcia last week and just work out, you know, when governance and governing bodies make a decision or don't make a decision. But Oasis, for you, he was banned. It's probably the pinnacle of his captaincy career. He's had a great series, double hundred with the bat. He's led the team tremendously well. We know how difficult it is to lead a West Indies side at the best of times. And now he's going to miss out that opportunity to lead the team in the third and final test match.
Yeah, and this is where I believe that ICC should be able to step in and say, look, they really need to look at the rules they've put out in terms of playing test cricket. This is an ideal situation where they could have said, okay, I know you're following the rules and you've handed the ban, but hold on a minute. He would have had the opportunity. And like Holder mentioned in his interview, yes, he could have made the overrate up, but then they would have sort of not playing cricket properly because they would have just tried to make sure that the batters would stay in so that they can get their overrate up. I mean, that's not entertainment, is it? I mean, that's almost sort of you're lying to the public to say, you know, we're really trying to get the player out, which how it should be every single delivery. So you can't really have a situation like that. And I just believe that this is where ICC should have stepped in and say, look, we need to change this and we can't have a guy banned with 2 days left in a test match.
That is food for thought, and I want to take Archie up on his little offer there of a couple of talkers that we'll get the thoughts of from the boys in just a few moments' time. The time, though, is fast approaching 6 o'clock. Manchester United very much in control down at Craven Cottage. We'll bring you round the grounds. In fact, next up, we'll be talking to Dan Wheeler, who's going to be your commentator, from 7 o'clock right here on Dubai Island 3.8 with live coverage of Liverpool against Bournemouth. Can Liverpool bounce back and reassert themselves at the top of the table? That will be coming up next.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.